Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. Issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
I think reproductive freedom is the fundamental reason that women are in this jam in the first place, the desire to control reproduction. So the ability to have or not have children without government interference, to make that decision for ourselves, is the biggest determinant of whether we're healthy or not, whether we're educated or not, whether we can work or not. So, you know, that comes first in a big way.
That's Gloria Steinem. You've seen her all over the place today because the magazine that she helped found 40 years ago is celebrating an anniversary. It's an anniversary for feminism, too, and she and her co-founder are basking in the praise of the culture and of the media for today. She says a lot has happened, but the biggest issue still on the table is what she calls reproductive freedom, reproductive choice. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, 16th of November. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse joins us. Her thoughts on the 40th anniversary of Ms. Magazine. Then we'll review a sermon preached on the last Sunday of the church year. It was preached last year because the last Sunday of the church year is actually this coming Sunday, by Dr. Scott Murray of Memorial Lutheran Church in Houston, Texas, a good old-fashioned Issues Etc. sermon review for the better part of this hour of Issues Etc. You can join us for the whole hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or tweet at IssuesETC. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's authored the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
What's your reaction to Gloria Steinem, her answer there when asked what's one of the biggest factors for feminism today?
Well, she's completely out of touch with reality, because the fact is the younger generation is increasingly pro-life, and young women are pro-life, and the reason they're pro-life is because they want to have a movement for women's empowerment that does not require them to kill small children. And I just don't think that's too much to ask, you know, that women's empowerment could be consistent with a world where little babies don't die. So I think she's way out of touch, frankly, and it's interesting that the Today Show thinks she's so important. You know, she's being lionized and heralded by the media. Well, that's because this is the culture that she has helped to make. And if you can listen to that whole interview, and you will not see her take the slightest responsibility for anything that has gone wrong as a result of her brand of radical feminism. So, you know, the culture is what it is in a large part because of her. She takes credit for everybody who has a job. She takes credit for every woman who's had a job, every woman who's graduated from college since 1965, but she won't take the slightest responsibility for anything that's gone wrong.
I want to talk about what's gone wrong in just a minute, but I want you to explain something to me, because this is obviously kind of this is, you know, heyday of the early 70s radical speak that I heard from her this morning. She said something, can you translate, gratitude never radicalized anyone?
That just blew me away when she said that. Gratitude never radicalized anyone. She was reacting to somebody who said, you know, gosh, I take feminism for granted. I'm grateful to these women who made it possible for me to have a job and so on. And so Gloria's reaction to that is, well, gratitude never radicalized anybody. Meaning that she wants people to be in a state of radicalization, meaning that revolution is what she's about, not about reform, and meaning that being gratitude is somehow for suckers and losers. And that is why her kind of feminism and her movement is so out of touch with the lives of ordinary people, because most people don't want to go around in a fever pitch of radicalism and anger and indignation all the time. Most people don't like living that way. Most people like to look around and say, wow, there's some pretty good things in my life, and I'm grateful to the people who made them possible. That's completely alien to her whole way of thinking. And that's how you can see that the feminist movement always was a radical movement. It was never a reform movement. It was always a revolutionary movement. And that's your clue that that's the case.
What has feminism, a lot is going to be said today, what feminism has accomplished in the last 40 years. What are some of those things that have gone wrong that you think feminism should take responsibility for?
Well, let's just stick with the reproductive freedom issue, because in her mind, being able to, quote-unquote, control your fertility without government interference is essential for women to be able to do what they want. Well, what she really means is that for women to be able to behave like men in the workplace, women have to chemically or otherwise neuter themselves so that children don't interfere with their lives. That's what she's really saying. And so what she has tried to bring into being, she wants to bring into being a world where sex is a sterile activity, and it's normatively sterile, meaning that the normal state of affairs is that you have sex and you don't have a baby. That's the normal state of affairs. And she has been a central part of trying to build a society around that premise. Well, that premise is fundamentally irrational, because sex is a fertile activity. And if you're going to have sex with the idea that you're entitled to it being sterile, that means you have to have abortion, right? You have, because some contraception is always going to fail, so you have to have abortion. And so what you end up with is a culture where really, in a sense, men at their worst are the people who are benefited, because it's the kind of sex that teenage boys dream of, which is to say, sex without any kind of commitment or consequences. In fact, trying to create that kind of world has led to a world in which women are pressured for sex early and often, and they don't have any backup, you know. So if a young lady wants to say, well, no, I'm going to remain a virgin until I marry, she's kind of considered odd. She's the one who has to offer an account of herself, and she's competing for male attention with girls who'll do anything, you know. And so for women, the pressure has become intense for them to literally to do anything, to do whatever a guy asks for, and to really settle for a whole lot less in the way of male attention, commitment, and deep-seated love. And so therefore, the consequence of that, you know, that whole change to our way of courtship and dating and relating to one another, is that we have a lot harder time getting married and staying married for reasons that we've discussed on this program many times before, Todd. But we also have a situation where men don't grow up the way they should. Men postpone their adulthood because they can have, you know, years and years of contraceptive sex and never have to face any consequences of that. And so, you know, it's only when some woman they really, really care about pushes on them really, really hard that they settle down and get married and actually have children as a result of their sex lives. But in the meantime, they've put a lot of their life is behind them. And so there are many consequences, I think, of this focus on creating sex as a purely recreational, sterile activity. There are many negative consequences to that. And nobody on Gloria Steinem's side of the line has ever come close to acknowledging those things, much less taking responsibility for them.
Gloria Steinem and the other radical feminists like her want us to believe and to accept that the genuine strides that women have made in terms of non-discrimination and income and all those kind of things that are undeniable in the last 40 years are all, number one, achieved by them and achieved and could not have been achieved without legalized abortion. Could it have been achieved without legalizing abortion? And what would feminism look like today, if it hadn't, from the very beginning, at least with the Steinem kind of feminism, been built around the premise that children just get in the way of women doing what they want to do?
Well, you know, Todd, the odd thing about your question, the way you posed it, is that in point of fact, the trend toward women participating in the labor force, the trend toward women participating in higher education, those trends were in place long before Ms. Magazine. They started around the turn of the century. In fact, there was a study by an economic historian that looked at women's participation in higher education, showing that before World War II, men and women were entering the labor entering higher education in equal numbers, and it was only after the war with GI Bill flooding the universities with men, that was the peak of there being more men in college than women. And it's been headed towards parity ever since. And in fact, women now outnumber men in higher education in virtually every discipline outside science. And so the idea that feminism and only feminism is what made that possible, I think that's completely at variance with the facts. The facts are that Gloria Steinem and her ilk saw a trend that was already there, and they jumped on that trend, and they gave it meaning. And they assigned a certain kind of radical meaning to it that has shaped the way people have thought about their experience. And so, you know, even very sensible women will say, oh, well, at least feminism made it possible for me to do this and that and the other. It could have happened another way, and it could have happened without all of the kind of anti-male, anti-child rhetoric that we have all had to put up with. And I think what feminism would look like or could look like, it could still look like this, Todd, and I think young women want this kind of feminism. What it could look like is a feminism where we figure out ways for women to be able to participate in the labor force on our own terms as women, as childbearing married mothers who have other concerns besides the labor force, so that we come back into the labor force in our 40s and 50s, that we work part-time, that we telecommute while our children are small, that we start businesses, that we do all of those kinds of things that are different from the male-dominated career track, and that we make it possible for women to work as women rather than simply being guys in skirts. That's really what feminism offered us, Todd.
Well, let's take a break. I want you for another few minutes on the other side of the break, if you don't mind. And I got a couple of the questions for you, not only about Ms. Magazine, but about this strange change of mind on the part of some senators with regard to the Defense of Marriage Act. They were for it, and now, about 10 years later, wow, they're against it. We'll be right back with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
I am strong.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. A few more minutes with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris. We're talking about feminism and the 40th anniversary of Ms. Magazine, and in just a second, her thoughts on some flip-flopping senators when it comes to the Defense of Marriage Act. Jennifer, was Ms. Magazine necessary 40 years ago? Is it necessary today?
You know, Todd, I'm proud to say that I managed to get a doctorate in economics, get tenured at a major university, write two books, raise two children, eight foster children, and I have never read a single issue of Ms. Magazine. Somehow, I managed. And I think that what Ms. Magazine was and is something for radicals, for a certain type of radical, revolutionary kind of mentality for whom nothing is ever good enough. And I know that there are a lot more women like me than there are women like Gloria Steinem, no question in my mind.
Your thoughts on senators who had, more than 10 years ago, been in favor of the Defense of Marriage Act. This is way back in the Clinton years, I believe. And recently have gathered together primarily Democratic senators, among them Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, who's a Roman Catholic, by the way, and have come out saying, no, DOMA is unconstitutional. They're kind of repeating the same line that President Obama and his administration is saying about the Defense of Marriage Act. Your thoughts?
Well, look, Todd, the arguments really haven't changed that much. The reason people are changing their votes is because the gay lobby is more powerful and has more money. And the Obama administration has pulled out all the stops to do what it wants, to do what the gay lobby wants throughout their administration. I mean, we could go on and on about the different things that Obama has done for them that he has not done for other similar kinds of constituents. And so I don't think it's a case of that the public has changed all that much or that the arguments have changed all that much. The Constitution is still the Constitution. The issue is the power and the money of the gay lobby. Now, I don't know exactly what's going on with any particular senator with respect to this vote, and I certainly wouldn't want to name any names or make any accusations. But I will tell you this. When the state of New York recently voted to redefine marriage as the union of any two persons, the New York Times actually bragged that that was done by the donations of a handful of wealthy Republicans, including one big Wall Street guy who has a gay son and evidently a guilty conscience, who just lavished campaign money and promises of campaign money onto Republicans who would agree to vote in favor of redefining marriage. The New York Times bragged about that. You can't make that stuff up. You would think that they would be embarrassed by that. I mean, it's just flat-out open corruption of votes for cash. You know, I mean, cash for votes, whichever way you want to put it. And there's no sense whatsoever in which the people of New York lost the institution of marriage because they didn't have good enough arguments or because the Constitution somehow demanded it. It was money, plain and simple, and they're not even embarrassed about it. So what's going on in the halls of Congress today? I couldn't say. Nobody's come out and been quite that blatant about it, as far as I know. But I think that is the trend.
You can check out the great work being done by Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris and the Ruth Institute. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for the Ruth Institute. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is a regular guest, founding president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome, Todd.